I actually leveraged the fact that I was different and unique, right, in the interview process, right? I didn't talk like everybody else that they were interviewing. You know, I talked about my specific experiences and why those experiences were relevant to me being able to come and adjust and, you know, take on new challenges in an organization that I didn't know a lot about. Well, I knew about them, but not so much. And then I would leverage the connection that I had, obviously, with, you know, the partnerships through Dell to kind of, you know, leverage that environment, the role that I was applying for with Dell.
Welcome to Elevate Your Career, the podcast dedicated to empowering individuals from all walks of life as they navigate the ever-changing landscape of their chosen fields. In this show, we'll be bringing on a diverse range of professionals from various career stages to uncover the secrets behind achieving success in any industry. We'll explore how they achieved their career goals and the paths they took to get there. Your host is none other than Nicole McMackin, CEO of the Irvine Technology Corporation, ITC, an award-winning information technology solutions and staffing provider. Now let's get to the show.
Welcome to Elevate Your Career, where we will delve into the journeys of exceptional individuals who have soared to remarkable heights in their professional lives. In this episode, we shine a spotlight on Lucy Donaldson, Vice President of Technology, whose career trajectory has been as dynamic as it has been inspiring. Lucy's story is one of resilience, adaptability, and unwavering dedication. Born overseas, she embarked on a journey marked by numerous transitions back and forth, each presenting its own set of challenges and triumphs. Throughout it all, Lucy's unwavering determination and the guidance of her parents served as beacons of inspiration, shaping her into the formidable leader she is today. With over 15 years of experience spanning financial services, software and hardware sectors, Lucy has honed her skills as a customer-focused global leader. Her track record speaks volumes. Having consistently delivered incremental growth, defined strategic direction, and steered operations to excellence across multiple regions, Lucy's agility in assimilating new information, coupled with her innate ability to see the bigger picture and tackle complex challenges with a grounded approach, sets her apart in her competitive landscape. But Lucy's impact extends far beyond the boardroom. As a regular speaker and contributor at prestigious conferences and publications in fintech, customer experience, banking and technology, she actively shares her insights and expertise, contributing to the collective advancement of her industry. Join us as we delve into Lucy Donaldson's remarkable journey, exploring the lessons learned, the obstacles overcome, and the wisdom gained along the way. Get ready to be inspired, motivated, and equipped with valuable insights to elevate your own career trajectory. This is Elevate Your Career, and Lucy Donaldson's story is one you will not want to miss. Lucy, welcome to the show. I'm super thrilled to have you today. And you know what? It has taken us quite a bit of time. We had a little technical issue before we got on, and Lucy and I got on, and I don't know, we've tried to reschedule this podcast between her schedule and my schedule, I don't know, 3-5 times, maybe 100. So it's a new year and really thrilled to have you here. So welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. And so, as you know, I know you've listened to the podcast. We start out always with just kind of a fun fact that perhaps maybe not a lot of people would know about you. So hopefully, I mean, you knew this question was probably coming, but would love to hear your fun fact.
Sure. Maybe not so much a fun fact, but more about sort of, I guess, my uniqueness. It's funny, I have my last name is pretty generic, Donaldson, but I actually am Portuguese. My maiden name is De Santos, and I have actually, I think through all of the countries that I've lived in, I've been able to accumulate sort of passports and citizenships and, you know, permanent status. So I actually have quite a few. I'm a British. I have a Canadian passport, and I also have a Portuguese passport, and I am a permanent resident of the US. So at the end of it all, I might actually have 4 passports at the end of it. But I think it's testament to, you know, taking advantage of the opportunities that I have to go and travel and live in different places. And I think that's really helped to nourish my career throughout, you know, the many years that I've been working.
Oh my goodness. So that is a wonderful fun fact, because I don't think I know anybody with 4 passports. So you are definitely the first. And let's talk a little bit, you know, normally we kick off the podcast with talking about you growing up, your family dynamics, because the real emphasis is for our listeners to get a really sound understanding of how you and what you've done throughout your career, how you were raised. And we've always had some really fun, interesting kind of, wow, I didn't know that about you moments. Obviously, your 4 passports is driving part of this conversation. But, you know, let's talk about, I guess, how you got 4 passports, because that'll align itself nicely with your growing up and history.
Sure. So I was born in the UK to Portuguese immigrants. Obviously, my parents are both Portuguese. My sister, who is also Portuguese. And so they were living in Portugal. They moved to the UK, where my dad actually went to chef school there. And I was then born in the UK. And then at the age of 3, we immigrated to Canada. And my dad actually helped to open one of the first large hotels in Toronto, the Bristol Hotel. And he was one of the big chefs there. I don't think the Bristol Hotel chain is there anymore, but so obviously, you know, 3 years old, landing in a country we didn't know a lot about, didn't really speak the language either. So grew up in Toronto, and then I had an opportunity to go back to the UK when I met my husband, which is another story. But I met him, and I ended up living in the UK for about 18 years. And then 6 years ago, my husband had an opportunity to move in the company that he was in. And so we moved to Colorado, which is where we're based now. And so we have permanent residency here. And I believe this year is when we can apply for citizenship in the US as well.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, that's great. Excited.
Yeah, I bet you are. I was somewhere this weekend and I ran into a gentleman. His name's Scott Lewis, and he's a professor in Arizona. And we were talking about the podcast, and he had brought to my attention, he said, you know, in your podcast, often you talk about certain themes that drive very successful people like yourself, Lucy. And, you know, they are curious minds. They have an ability to take risk and calculated risk. He said, but what you'd never mention, he said, is that throughout their history and being, since, you know, if they came from or where they grew up, they had a family that was very supportive typically of them, he said. And then from there, their relationships that they fostered, whether, you know, romantic relationships or friendships, were very supportive as well. And I was thinking about every single person that really has been on this podcast. And at some point, overwhelmingly, the amount of people, they have really had individuals in their lives that have supported them and their ability to take risk and their ability to get up and move. And it just reminded me right now of this conversation, because you were speaking about you moving for your husband. And I know your husband has moved and done things for you too in your career. So maybe we can touch on a little bit. Let's go back to your family and growing up and what your first job looked like and what that was.
Yeah, for sure. So I owe a lot of my success to my parents. I'm going to get emotional. I always do this. It's weird, right? So obviously moving to a new country, not having a lot of financial support. I was super young at the time, but I remember we moved to Canada. We lived in a basement apartment, and we actually ended up living in the house of a friend. And I think community is super, super important in terms of your success, right? So my parents were able to come to a country. They didn't know the language. They came and they planted themselves. And I think my parents worked so hard, right? Like working in the servicing industry, being Portuguese, I think, you know, didn't really offer them a lot of opportunities. They did not graduate from university. I was the first graduate of university in my family. And I think that hard work and that testament to them always making sure that both my sister and I were comfortable. We had lovely environments in which we lived in. They were always very supportive of our schooling as well. So I had the benefit of, you know, working and being in a place where education wasn't super, super expensive, right? So Canada had, you know, a great education system. And in university, you don't have to like spend, you know, a lot of money to go to university. And so I think that really supported both, like my parents still paid for university, but I felt that I had to be super successful in university in order for, it was almost like, you know, paying my parents back for all the support that they had given me. My parents worked crazy hours, right? So we were like what they call latchkey kids, right? So, you know, we would come home, we had people in the neighborhood who would come and make sure that we got home okay. You know, we had kids that we would play with and then obviously do our homework. And I had my older sister who was 4 years older, who was a huge, who also had a huge impact in my life as well. So I think that grounding, that hard work, seeing how hard my parents worked gave me the need or the, you know, the motivation to say I was going to work hard, but I wasn't, you know, I was hopefully going to be able to maybe get a little bit further ahead in terms of, and I knew education was going to enable me to get there. And then, you know, having gone through, I actually got married early as well. So my husband today is not my first husband, but obviously I went through a divorce as well. And I had my daughter and then I met my husband.
Was this all in Canada?
Yeah, this was all in Canada.
And when you were going through school, I just want to back up because I think that was such an important part that you said is oftentimes I'm very similar to you. I had a working class family and they worked a lot of hours and I felt this obligation to make the most out of myself, to make them proud because I knew that they were sacrificing so much to make sure that I was able to move myself ahead. And so I really align myself with that. And I think so many people, they see their parents or their first generation, you know, university students, and we feel that indebtedness to move ourselves forward in light of watching how hard they're working. How did you're in technology, you're a very successful vice president. And were you, did you decide to go, was that your major? Were you computer science or no?
I did the traditional route. I went like political science and I had a minor in women's studies and I was going to pursue law school. And I did the whole law school application thing, had some success there. And then I decided I didn't want to go to law school. So unfortunately my parents were like, why, you know? And then I don't think like mentally I was ready to do that. And so I ended up just pursuing, I finished university. I then did actually a year of like postgraduate diploma at a local community college just to do like, I thought I wanted to get into like public policy and that. So I kind of just like explored that for about a year. And then I thought, you know, I think I'm going to go and, you know, put my feet in and start actually working, you know, for a couple of startups. So I did that. Like I went and I started to work in marketing. Right. Because it was one of those areas where, you know, I had a really good grounding in some of the courses that I had taken university. I was a good communicator. So I basically just started doing like marketing roles for small technology companies when I started out. And I think because of the environment at the time, you know, there was a lot of startups happening. I think that was just, it kind of gave me an opportunity to go potentially into organizations that I may have not, that I probably traditionally would not have considered.
Was it difficult for you to
I mean, I know you were at the junior college looking and, you know, taking and trying to figure out. It's funny because I'm listening to you and we actually are looking at each other. And I could have did that same path, right? Political science, law school, yeah. You know, took all of that, got in, yeah. And then was like, ah, I'm going to get married, you know, and I was like, oh, I'm not going to do this. But yeah. Tell me about, was it difficult for you to get in to marketing with these startups, or what, you know, what were?
Well, I think, yeah, it's kind of interesting because I worked throughout like my entire, like right from when I was 12, I worked like part-time jobs, right? So I did like things like hostessing, I did waitressing, I worked for like retailers. I have this side like illness in retail, but like it's like I love, you know, clothes and stuff. So I did that for a long time. And I believe that those experiences, and I say this to my daughter a lot, is those experiences enable me to understand things like customer service, right? That everybody talks about today, you know, what it's like to manage you know, controversy or challenge in an environment, like in a work environment, right? Like think about you're a hostess, right? And you get like irate customers. Like how do you manage that conversation, right? And I believe that those foundational experiences enabled me to also then take that right into the roles that I was then subsequently given. Also, I think communication skills is so important, right? And I think having confidence in your ability to talk about yourself and say it like an interview, I feel that I had, I don't know why, but I was actually able to interview quite well. And so some of the roles, I remember like my first interview, I went in like researching the company, you know, I had myself really well prepared for, you know, potentially some of the questions, even though it was like a super junior level role. I felt that I had good grounding in where I was going and kind of positioning myself well. And so I think that helped me just in terms of communication, being able to present myself well. And then that gave me like that step in, right? And some people say, you know, I've always been told that I'm very passionate. And so I think some of that passion comes through what I'm interviewing as well. And so I think it's refreshing to people who are interviewing me or, you know, maybe to interviewing candidates. And so I think that kind of helped me along the way. I may not have known, you know, went into roles that I really didn't know what I was doing. But I think my passion and my drive helped me to kind of be successful in those early roles in my career.
I think you touched on something really important. It's really storytelling. And those storytelling is one of the five key components to being able to elevate your career, is to be able to succinctly tell a story about yourself or about a project or whatever the subject matter is in a coherent, concise manner that resonates with other individuals. And when you and I first met, we were introduced, I think, by someone on my team, Christine Murrow. And I remember speaking with you and I thought, oh my gosh, I've got to have her on my podcast. But very much for the same reasons that you just explained, number one, you exude confidence. Number two, you have a really positive energy about yourself. It seemed to me, and we talked about your history and your career, that yes, you didn't necessarily have every facet dialed in, but you were willing to take a step, learn, and do the work. And I think that's probably why at a young age, a lot of these different employers, when you went to interview, they said, hey, yes, let's take a chance because she's smart, she's bright, she's a great storyteller, meaning you story told about yourself, about your capabilities. So that's fabulous. So I'm glad that you brought that up because that's really important when people are seeking their careers.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I didn't realize I had the storytelling capability or competency until later on in my career. It's quite funny, right? You just feel that it's like part of the narrative that you tell, you know, in terms of your experience or how you're positioning yourself in a particular role and, you know, and that creativity that says, oh, you know, I can probably shape myself to maybe ensure that, you know, this role is something that I'm willing to pursue as well. And then somebody, you know, a few years back said, hey, you're a great storyteller. You know, we're going to go and get you. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even know I had that superpower. Right. So, you know, it's funny how people end up surfacing these opportunities out of these competencies that you didn't even know existed. So, and I think that has a lot to do with the, you know, good sponsorship and mentorship that you have around you.
For sure. I love that you said that. It's a superpower. You're so right. It's a superpower. So you are in marketing. You're exposed to a lot of technology companies, startups. And where are you at? You're still in Canada?
Still in Canada. And then I was working for like this small startup. It was a software organization. They were building actually the first, one of the first video gaming platforms, like mobile device platforms. And I was doing PR for them and marketing for them. And that's an interesting role because it's where I actually then ended up meeting my husband, which is quite interesting. But I was working for them and it was a great opportunity because I had exposure directly to the CEO as well, because it was a smarter business. I was able to actually kind of do a lot more than, you know, the specific, you know, role that I was in. And I find that, you know, a lot of people, as they're starting out their career, they want to go work for the big names. And I found that actually working in a smaller, medium-sized businesses really gave me a lot of exposure to roles that I may not have actually really understood or exposure to more senior level people that I ended up learning a lot from. So I took a lot of benefit out of, you know, those smaller organizations, getting, you know, rolling up my sleeves, getting dirty, understanding, you know, different aspects of the roles that I was interfacing with. And then that helped me to be a better person in my role as well.
That is something because normally we hear, which, you know, you go into the very large firms, you graduate and you work really hard to get in these multi-billion dollar organizations like, you know, McKinsey, you know, is prime organization, you know, top of the top, they take you in and train you. But you're really, like you'd mentioned, you're staying within one vertical, you're learning things within that, but you're right. And I never thought of it that way because I'm very similar. I went to small organizations I chose versus very large corporate organizations where my sister-in-law had gone straight away to multi-billion dollar organizations. She now works for Microsoft and very different because you're right. You get exposure to a lot of different facets of the business and being able to cross over perhaps is easy from marketing to technology to sometimes even working and understanding through finance and accounting and having that exposure. So yeah, that's really great. Thanks for pointing that out. I never really took back and thought of it that way.
Are you ready to break barriers and become the next CIO in the tech world? Here's the exciting news. We've custom designed a groundbreaking course specifically for female executives interested in becoming CIOs. And the best part? It's absolutely free. This women's leadership course is the first of its kind to support female leaders in technology. The program delves into real-life scenarios that CIOs face daily. Whether they're leading small enterprises or vast Fortune 500 companies. So if you're a manager, director, or VP of technology, this course is a perfect fit for you. Current CIOs and technology leaders will take you on a 15-week journey, guiding you through a 360-degree view of what it takes to be a CIO, the pragmatics of implementing IT governance, the foundations of C-suite level project management and portfolios, and so much more. Ready to take a leap of faith in your career? Go to www.irvinetechcorp.com/program, and the link is in the description box. If you want to contribute to a more inclusive and equitable tech world for women, you can start at www.irvinetechcorp.com/program. Join us in our next course for the Women in Leadership program and be part of this exciting journey. Now back to the show.
And it enabled me then to actually move to larger organizations, right? Then I did that for a while. And then I did go to ATI, which actually was a Canadian company that eventually got bought out by AMD, which is the big graphics chip manufacturer. And so, you know, that was a lot of fun because you were then exposed to like going to like a big office with tons of people. I built some great relationships with folks that I still keep in touch with today. And they've all been very successful. I was kind of in an environment where like the, you know, dealing with the big Dells and the Microsofts of the world in this environment. And so I got a lot of exposure to some of the big technology organizations. And I believe that gave me really good grounding to then make, you know, kind of the decision to, when I met my husband, to kind of move back to the UK, right? I say back because I was like so young when I left, but you know, back to the UK. And I always say to my husband, I always had this love affair with Europe, right? Like, because even though, you know, my parents always used to like put us on a plane because they couldn't afford to have us at school in the camps locally. So they would ship us off to Portugal for the summers and we would spend time with my family, you know, there. And so I always had this really this attachment to Europe, this attachment to kind of eventually wanting to go and live and work there. And so I had an opportunity to then move to the UK, right? I literally just showed up with this big container, you know, with my, you know, with this man who I met, you know, and I dated for like internationally for a year. And I said, okay, let's give it a go. And I had Lauren, who was very young. She was, you know, 4 or 5, who I brought with me. So here I was, you know, somewhat of a single mom moving to another country to go and be with, you know, another family, another, you know, man and start my career there as well. And so I got an opportunity to, again, you know, go to an environment where I didn't really know the work environment. I didn't know, you know, I didn't have any real network there, but you know, I just kind of leveraged what I knew and leveraged my husband's network, right, to go and work. And I managed to work for Dell Computers while I was there too. And I worked at a time where, you know, I was helping to run like corporate websites. So I leveraged that marketing experience to go and work in a role where I was kind of managing European websites. And it was really cool because like I had never really been in that cultural environment before. And so I was learning new cultures. I was learning, you know, how to work in a completely different environment, which I had never been exposed to. And, you know, building new friendships and new networks that were, again, people that I still keep in touch with today.
Does risk make you nervous?
Not really. Like it does to a certain, I think I get really anxious about it at first, but I kind of have like this, I don't know what it is. It's like, yeah, I'm not too afraid to kind of take risks, but I'm not like super risky where I wouldn't jump off a building or anything like that. I think I'm more apt to kind of having like professional risks versus like physical personal risks, if you know what I mean.
Right. So, no, yeah. I get it.
Which is weird because like, you know, some people think of it the other way, like the things that you can control, like where I'm okay to take risks at work, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, that is. It really is. Because I was putting myself, as you were speaking, in your shoes, right? Coming over with your daughter and you know, your new husband saying, hey, let's make a go of it. And were you nervous interviewing? Or I mean, obviously Dell's a huge company, but yeah. Was it different for you? Were they looking at you thinking like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It was nerve-wracking. I think also because it was like, would they think that my Canadian experience was credible? You know, you have this impression of like England and, you know, because they all talk so posh and, you know, the whole
they
thing.
Do,
and, you
they
think,
do.
And you think, you know, like everybody's super smart and, you know, that kind of thing. And here's this like North American, you know, showing up, even though, you know, I was born there. But yeah, it was quite funny. But I actually leveraged the fact that I was different and unique, right? In the interview process, right? I didn't talk like everybody else that they were interviewing. You know, I talked about my specific experiences and why those experiences were relevant to me being able to come and adjust and, you know, take on new challenges in an organization that I didn't know a lot about. Well, I knew about them, but not so much. And then I would leverage the connection that I had, obviously, with, you know, the partnerships through Dell to kind of, you know, leverage that environment, the role that I was applying for with Dell. So yeah, it was kind of nerve-wracking at first, also because like here I was in a new country, you know, I wanted to start to establish myself financially as well. So that's another thing that you don't really, right? You move, your financial profile does not go with you when you leave a country, right? You are like literally starting from scratch.
Oh my gosh. I've heard about this. I had a woman who I met that I think she was from Brazil and where's she working? She's working for Herbalife now, mm-hmm. But she came and she said she couldn't even rent a car or buy a car. She had no credit. Anything, nothing transfers. She said she would have to borrow money from family and friends to be able to establish credit. Is that the case?
Exactly the same thing. I couldn't even get a cell phone. I had to get boyfriend at the time, my husband now, but Nick, he had to get my phone for me. I needed a car, right? So he had to get my car for me. Like he had to like sign for like the lease, right?
Oh my gosh, I've heard about this. Sure, this is wild.
This independent woman, right, going to this environment, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm like now 100% reliant on somebody else, and I have not been reliant on somebody else for so long, right? So, which is crazy.
Oh my gosh, that would have freaked me out on its own. Did. Oh
and
my
then
gosh.
Eventually you start to build up your credit. You start, and it's not the same as at the U.S., but and that's another story. But like you know, it's you start to build up your credit, your career. You know, you build. You know, the financial model there is slightly different, but it's like all I had was a passport. You know, I had a British passport. That was it. And, you know, I can't imagine what it would be like for somebody who didn't even have like a passport. So, you know, that brought me back to my roots, which was like, oh my God, like my parents, like, you know, when they came, like they didn't even have that, right? At least I had some kind of foundation in the UK when I moved and they didn't even have that. So
that's right.
And it's great because, you know, I work for a company now, right, that helps that population. So I feel it's got a purpose and I know kind of what people go through, but it's quite interesting to go through that experience and then having to kind of go through that experience again when I then moved to the US, right? Here I was living in the UK for so many years. We then moved to the US and I came here and it was like, start all over again. No financial history. You can't bring your financial profile.
But what about your husband? So how did you make it?
He was sponsored by the company to come here to the US, but I was on his visa to come here. Right. Okay. So, but I'm, you know, thank goodness that they were able to get a visa where I was able to work because sometimes companies don't sponsor spouses to be able to work in a company, depending on how long that is. But we were lucky in where I was able to get, I was also part of the sponsorship to be able to work here. So then I was able to work, got a job, but again, like, I couldn't even get a cell phone. I had to get Nick to get me a cell phone.
Oh my gosh, that is crazy.
Like, but we have money. Like we right. had, you know, I had a house that I sold in the UK. We came here. It was like,
I know I'm skipping ahead, but when you both came back to the US, was that this, I know the company was sponsoring you in a start. So did they provide housing for you and cell phones and those?
Yeah. So Nick had that through his job, but I didn't. I had to do it completely, you know, on the periphery, right? So, you know, we then had to, thank goodness we had, you know, we worked with the HSBC in the UK and then they were able to kind of, you know, create alignment there, like, you know, through, so Nick was able to bring a portion of his profile over. So we, you know, we were eventually able to kind of buy a house here, but it was like, it was long.
Oh, you know, I didn't think about that because yeah. You see, especially in technology, you see a lot of people who are getting visas who are coming over for work. Mm-hmm. But I wonder, they must have to go through that same thing to set up because they have no established credit here.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same. Yeah. And, you know, like I think the visa process only takes you so far. The rest is up to you.
Wow.
Right. Like really. Wow. And then you have children who are moving with you. Right. So there's the whole school thing as well. Yeah. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It sounds like it. Oh my goodness. Okay. So sorry for that sidetrack. It's fascinating.
No, it's good. Sorry.
It's my fault. I just was shocked when you said that. So you're at Dell. And then how long were you at Dell and what role were you there? And did you have any mentors along the way that you would point to or advocates that you said, hey, you know, these people have been instrumental in my career up until now. And have they been, I know your parents were a huge support for you, but mm-hmm. anyone outside of that area that was helping you, mentoring you?
Not at that early in my career, to be honest. I think when I was at Dell, I ended up actually, my manager at Dell was really great. And, you know, he was super supportive of, you know, what I, you know, I was a I was an independent contributor to start off with when I was at Dell. And then, you know, I have like a team of 25 people that I have to manage. And so he helped me a lot to kind of understand how different I had to shape sort of my role there. I was there for about 4 years. I started off running like the EMEA team. And then I had an opportunity to kind of run more of like a global role. So getting exposure to the APAC market as well, which was fascinating. I think at that point in my career, I started to think, oh, you know, I was planted in the UK. I was doing well. And then I started to kind of get, that's when sort of like financial services started to kind of come, kind of turn around a little bit, where like a lot of people were focusing a lot of efforts on improving things like financial services. So, you know, sort of like around 2012, I actually ended up getting an opportunity to go, and I started to explore opportunities to go and work sort of like a technology capacity, but maybe for another industry, because I knew I had been in technology for so long. And so I went and worked for a company called TD Direct Investing, which is quite funny because here I was, a Canadian living in the UK, working for TD, which was actually a Canadian bank, for the direct investing portion of this bank, right? It was TD Waterhouse back in the day, I'm sure. I don't know if people remember that, but, you know, and the funny thing was, is it was a large bank, but they had a small investing arm in the UK, in the north of England, of all places as well. And so I ended up going and working there. And I think my role was a marketing role, which turned into more of like a technology role eventually. But I was working directly for the CEO, and he was fantastic in terms of like mentorship. It was a smaller, you know, house. And we ended up doing a lot of successful things. I helped to kind of build their tablet app at the time, and working very closely with my technology partners to start to talk about like, how do you actually start to deliver programs in an organization? What does it mean to be productive and drive efficiencies in your organization as you're driving growth? And so that exposed me to a completely different mindset in terms of some of the work that I was doing, and helped me to start to move more into kind of like a leadership role as well, right? So I got an opportunity to kind of build out a team there, marketing managers, communications, content, but then also starting to dip my foot in a more of like the pure kind of technology delivery functions as well, which is quite interesting. You know, introducing things, terminology like agile and what it meant to work in a, you know, in an agile way. So that was great. We had a lot of consultants come in and help us too. So I always take advantage of the fact that when you have consultants working for you, like try to learn as much as you can, because they have so much exposure to so many different companies, and they can bring such great best practices that you can then take with you as your toolkit, right? You bring along your little toolkit as you go to every different role.
Right. And it's funny because we have, I've had a few people on the podcast who were from consulting roles, and the exposure that they have because they're working a multitude of companies all at one time and looking at what different companies are doing and implementing as far as best practices, you know, new initiatives. And they always seem to have the most cutting edge technologies and the exposure. So that's so true, is to be able, when you're working with someone like that, to really be a sponge and take as much as you can and then learn from them, because it's a really sound opportunity for you when you advance your career to have that, like you said, a toolkit, right? That you've learned and you're ready to implement and speak to at other organizations. Perhaps even if you yourself hadn't, you know, worked where that consultant was, you've known enough about it. So, which is good stuff. So how long were you at this organization? It sounds like you had some good leadership opportunities there.
Yeah, I was there for a couple of years. And then I can't remember how I ended up leaving, but I think it was a recruiter who ended up getting in touch with me and said, hey, we have this great opportunity over at Lloyd's Banking Group. And they were kind of 1 year into their transformation, and they were bringing in folks that had like fresh thinking. And I guess like my exposure, I was starting to use like the fact that I had lived internationally. And I guess they liked that, because I remember like interviewing with them and they were all very fascinated with the fact that I had lived in Canada before and I had moved to the UK. So I started to think, oh, it's kind of a that's another thing I can check off, right? In terms of some good competencies that I was able to bring. And I think maybe it's just a different perspective, right? That you can bring to an organization, especially like a big old bank like Lloyd's Banking Group. So, and then I ended up actually interviewing with the CEO, COO at the time, who actually ended up being a great mentor to me, which is great. So he said, listen, you know, we don't really have like a fixed role. We're 1 year into this transformation. We're trying to redefine a lot of the digital team. You know, I think with your experience, why don't you come in, give it a go and see if you like it. If not, you know, you can part ways. But that's kind of how the interview went. And it ended up being probably one of the most impactful, I think, careers that roles that I had taken, even though I was only there for, I think I was there for about 2.5, 3 years, which was good. But it was, I was in an organization that was in the middle of transformation. They were redefining how to provide financial services to all of Britain, right? So they made a pretty public commitment to Britain to say, we're going to be the best bank for Britain. So there was a lot of pressure in the organization, obviously. They were revamping the entire mindset and culture of the bank as well. And so getting an opportunity to kind of be embedded into an organization that was in that time of their evolution was fantastic. We worked very closely with the McKinseys, the Deloittes, you know, they were all in there, you know, doing their thing. So I was able to be like a super sponge. And, you know, I started to build kind of like my profile as kind of like that CX transformation lead, helping organizations understand how to really bridge between like business performance and customer experience, you know, and then I leveraged relationships that I was building with even like some of our other partners that we were working with, like the Foresters of the world, right, had built some great relationships there. And we were doing some really great work with those teams. I had an opportunity to publish some inputs into a Forrester analyst report on CX transformation. So I feel that I was starting to kind of build up that roster of capabilities and competencies and the qualifiers, right, that you have in your career. And so, and I got a chance to do some really work on some really successful projects as well. So
when you're in the midst of this, are you thinking about when you are, you know, working with the McKinseys and the Deloittes and a lot of these other outsourced components and people? And you had mentioned early on that I think even before you moved to the back to the UK, you know, had a great network. Is that a big part? And when you were in the midst of it and working there, were you consciously thinking, I am going to make sure that I build strong relationships? Because those relationships, you had mentioned when you went over to Dell, you had previously had exposure to Dell before or similarities. Were you at that point in time pulling it all together that these relationships matter and they will help propel me in my future career? Was it that deliberate?
I don't think it was that deliberate. I think it just naturally happened, to be honest. Like I would like build relationships with people that, you know, I was having conversations with in meetings, and then, you know, they would invite me to go say and present at a conference or, you know, and then it was almost like you were kind of subconsciously building your network. And I wasn't necessarily thinking of it in terms of, I don't think of building my network as sort of, okay, now I can get ahead, right? It was more of, here are the relationships. It's really about the people that I'm learning from. That's kind of how I take networking. It's more about, what can I learn from these individuals to help me be a better person, to then be successful in the role that I'm in? How can I then offer those additional experiences to be able to kind of build my role within the organization and bring a little bit more value to the organization that I'm working in? But lo and behold, right, those types of networks then actually end up giving you extra benefit, right? So right. I was able to go and present at like one of the Adobe conferences with one of the partners that we were working with, right, to talk about some of the work that we had done. So you just naturally, it almost happened naturally, but I was subconsciously doing it as a way of kind of building friendships, getting also because I was relatively new to the UK. So I was like, I knew that I was going to be here for a while. So I was like, well, I want to find some friends. I want new friends.
You know? Right, like, right.
And, you know, you only think about it in your personal life, but I, you know, because I spend so much time at work, you know, I was actually really building more friendships at work.
And it's interesting that you say that because we spend so much time at work, right? 8 to 10 hours typically a day. Mm-hmm. And my friends, I mean, I have friends that are outside of work, but for the most part, they're at work. And, you know, and that's the unintended benefit as well, is when you're working with different partners and exposure, then they become part of your network. And so that are, when you have something or you're looking for an opportunity, those individuals are saying, hey, I've worked with her. I know her. I know the quality she has. Let me refer you in to another company. And it just eases your way into other organizations. And so I know we're getting close on time, sure. But so let's focus on you kind of your career back here in the US. How so? I know you're working at this very well-known bank. And did you stayed there for 3 years, it sounds like.
In the UK, you mean?
No, at Lloyds Bank.
Oh, yeah. So at Lloyds, yep. So I stayed there for 3 years and then I had an opportunity to go and actually work for a NatWest RBS, which was like a competing domestic bank, right, in the UK. And then I was there for a year reporting directly into the CDO. And then my husband announces that we are moving to Denver, right? So he had a promotion, we're going to move. And I was like, damn, you know, I was just on that path, right, to kind of really catapulting my career.
Yeah, because you're getting at a high level. Robert,
yeah, where I was your like reporting career into the CDO, largest, yeah, second largest bank in the UK, and making some really great traction there. Had a great relationship with my boss. I was getting exposure to the CEO as well, and so it was starting to really move. And then all of a sudden, you know, we moved to the US, and I was like, hey, that's good. You know, and I think, you know, at that time, obviously my husband, you know, I was there to support him, obviously. And, you know, we consciously talked about it. So we moved to the US and it was kind of, it was another big milestone, right, in my career, because it was like, I was starting from scratch career-wise. I was starting from scratch financially, right? Because again, you don't bring your profile with you. So it was, but I took advantage of that to say, okay, I don't really have a lot of networks. I kind of tried to see if I could use some of my networks in the UK to help me bridge some ties that I had that I could possibly make in the US, right? So obviously I knew that Western Union was in Denver. And so I ended up kind of leveraging some of the contacts that I had in the UK who are working on the business solution side of the business to go and, you know, get myself introduced to a few folks. But then I consciously made the decision that actually, you know, I'm going to come to the US. Maybe I'm going to do some consulting or try, you know, to kind of get familiar with, you know, different types of companies. So I ended up working for Concentrix, which was a consulting business, doing like CX transformation work and programs with financial services organizations here in the US. So I was able to do that for about a year. And it was okay doing it. I liked it because it was kind of, it gave me exposure to a lot of different organizations. But then, you know, the role eventually became super salesy, and you know, I know what my limitations are. I'm not a salesperson. So, you know, testament to people who do that, because I just don't have the skin for it and I'm more strategic. And so I was like, I felt like I needed to kind of think about like, maybe I needed to go back to kind of like more of a traditional banking space. And I actually ended up working for a credit union, which was something that I didn't really have a lot of exposure to. I had heard of credit unions. We had those in the UK. But then here I was kind of going back to a smaller business, right? I thought, actually, I'm starting in a new country. I'm going to maybe go back to a smaller organization where I can get a better feel for what it's like to work in the US, right? Like realistically. And so I had some really great success there. I had a great manager in that company. He was so supportive. We were able to do some really great work, but then eventually kind of, you feel it was almost like too small. And I knew that I was maybe over-indexing on what I was able to provide the organization. And I started thinking a little bit more, okay, now that I'm planted in the US, maybe I should, you know, think a little bit more about like where I want to start to go next, right? Because I was kind of moving into that role. I was kind of beyond director. I was now moving into that VP role. And I knew that if I really wanted to kind of pursue the C-level, I was going to have to work for a larger organization to get the exposure, to get the experience. And then I got called by a recruiter to go and work for current company, which is Western Union. And I leveraged, you know, my product background and experience that I had over the last few years to go and
And you're vice president
here.
There. Yeah.
Yep.
So you're a VP of strategic portfolio and product management. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I actually, I'm more on the program side now, but yeah, it's been an amazing experience because, when I came here, we had another CEO. I was able to be part of an organization that again was in transformation, right? So I was doing product for a year. And then, you know, they made some significant changes here at the C-level. We had a new CEO. I was tapped on the shoulder to go and work on the corporate strategy team. So I helped to work on the corporate strategy that we see today. And I think that's just because it's the great sponsorship and mentorship that I've had around the business that I've been able to get those experiences. in this company. And I've been here for 3 years now, and we're doing some great stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's been quite a ride.
So as I'm listening myself critically to our conversation, I think people are going to listen to this podcast and think, wow, what a cool ride. Like, what a cool journey. That's really sexy to go, you know, from the UK to Canada, to the UK, to living in Portugal in the summers. And there's going to be a lot of people who are listening to this and saying, this sounds like, except for the credit perspective, that it would be a little frightening. But if someone wanted to follow your trajectory, what would you say? And what advice would you give them?
Yeah, I would say, don't be afraid to be uncomfortable and take risks. You know, it doesn't have to be forever, right? Like, you can always go back. You can always go back to where, you know, your home is or where your comfort space is. But I'm thankful for the opportunities that I was given to be able to move. And I would welcome anybody to go and live somewhere for 1 year somewhere else, you know, for sure. And work somewhere else, even if it's not like the most amazing role, because you'll get so much more out of it than you ever expect.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great piece of advice. So we always end with some fun facts about you. We call them the Fast Five, but we've learned so much about you, which is amazing. I loved this podcast. And we'll just blast through these pretty quickly. Sure. Who was your role model as a child?
My mom, my dad.
Your favorite professional book?
Oh my gosh. Who Moved My Cheese?
I love that. I love it. It's so true, right?
Yeah.
So true. And your favorite downtime activity that you use to recharge?
Oh, I go to the gym. I work out. I love it. It's not really downtime, but it's...
It's not downtime.
Yeah. It's not downtime, but I do love going to the gym.
You feel good after, that's for certain. Yeah. And your favorite food?
Oh, pancakes.
And I am really interested for this answer. Your favorite country?
Oh, Portugal.
Oh, I bet. Mm-hmm. Beautiful place. And I bet it feels so much like home too with your family.
It is. It's lovely.
Lucy, it has been fantastic. I'm so glad we finally did it. It's been months. We did it. Thank you again. This was incredible. And I appreciate you really being forthright and, you know, just raw with your emotions and your advice. So this has been a great episode. I appreciate it.
That's great. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Enjoyed our conversation.
I hope you enjoyed the episode today on the Elevate Your Career podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on your chosen platform that you are listening to us on. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this episode with them, or post it on your social media to share with your friends. You can catch the show notes for this episode and any mentioned links in the description of this episode. Irvine Technology Corporation, ITC, excels at finding top-tier tech professionals and matching them with businesses. Whether you're an employer with tech opportunities or a tech professional searching for the perfect role, ITC is your go-to solution. Visit www.irvinetechcorp.com for more information. Once again, it's www.irvinetechcorp.com. We'll see you on the next episode.